Today on Wings, Iceland's Pirate Party.
We are now scoring again and again and again as the biggest party with 34% of the vote. And nobody is as shocked about this as we are.
There's a river of birds in migration, a nation of women with wings. There's
Welcome to Wings, a series of news and current affairs programs by and about women around the world, produced and distributed by the Women's International News Gathering Service.
Economic collapses are opportunities for change, not just for the right, but also for the left, as demonstrated by the people and politics of Iceland. The Scandinavian nation faced a similar economic collapse to Greece's 2015 banking failure in 2008. Unlike Greece, Iceland lawmakers, pressured by a populist movement, rejected austerity measures, imposed a progressive tax policy by increasing taxes on higher incomes while minimizing cuts from social services, and threw some of its bankers, responsible for the country's economic collapse, in prison. For this edition of Wings, we visit with Member of Parliament, activist and self-described poetician, Birgitta Jónsdóttir. Jónsdóttir is not just a politician, she's a former member of WikiLeaks and a political strategist who co-founded Iceland's Pirate Party, which is now surging in the polls. She says economic crises are opportunities for revolutionary, progressive change. I'm Christina Onnestad, independent journalist and radio producer. We begin our conversation with Birgitta Jónsdóttir describing her work to initiate the movement for a new constitution in Iceland.
I have co-created two political movements in Iceland in the last 6.5 years and gotten them both inside the parliament without no money and primarily around just being able to understand how the system works and hack it in order to utilize its weaknesses or strengths in order to be able to create a democratic platform for ordinary people who feel the need to not only complain about things, but actually do something about it. So my first political movement was the civic movement that was created in the wake of the financial collapse in Iceland. It was a coalition of different grassroots movements. And we had a very simple agenda, which is the agenda that the Pirate Party also has taken on board, which is constitutional change. We have a temporary constitution that we've had for 70 years. It was a recycled constitution from Denmark, who were our colonists. And because when you change internal structures in societies, those that are accustomed to have the power do not want to let go of it. And that's why the parliament has not been able, or the politicians, to change the constitution holistically, like we're supposed to do, for 70 years. So it was in the agenda of the civic movement to dissolve it after one term if we could not accomplish our task. It was a hit-and-run movement. We had a think tank in the wake of the crisis. There were all these different groups forming everywhere, discussing what do we want instead. And I became part of a sort of a prominent, very active think tank. Like, we were discussing what do we need to do in order for preventing this from happening again. And we all agreed we needed a new constitution where there would be a proper three division of power, and we would change, you could actually vote for individuals, cross parties, and just to sort of try to capture the politics out of these institutionalized political parties. And that is sort of what was then brought into the protests and all the articles that were written, and where everybody was talking about New Iceland. You know, how could we create the society that many people had dreamt of, but it was never the right time. So yes, in the wake of the crisis, that was the right time to push forward these fundamental changes.
So the constitution was sort of born out of the 2008 economic crisis. Could you tell us about that?
The economic crisis hit us full force very late 2008, and 2009, there were so much protest. It was sort of an uprising in Iceland. People wanted that government that was responsible for the not only the crisis, but responsible for not warning people by carrying on in the fable, even if they knew there were very serious things wrong. So people really didn't have a chance to protect themselves. The financial crisis was a consequence of not only the banking sector or the politicians. It was the media had failed, the academia had failed, the politicians, of course, and the institutions, the regulatory institutions, and the financial sector. None of it could have happened if they hadn't all failed. And so in the wake of the crisis, in the protests, we had four demands. One of them was that there would be a constitution written for and by the people of Iceland. And so the constitutional process was a part of the election promises that the new government promised. And even if we were a minority party, my party, we worked with the government on that task. And they did a beautiful process around this. So, for example, they held an assembly of 1,000 people randomly selected from the National Registry to have a discussion about the social agreement. You know, what sort of nation are we? How do we want to see it reflected in a constitution? And so that constitution was then written by a group of people that were elected in a constitutional parliament. And then that constitution was voted on. Parliament called for that vote. It's not a binding vote because it's not constitutional to do that. It would change, of course, with the new constitution. So the parliament, in the end, ignored that national referendum. And so we really feel, the Pirate Party and many others in Iceland, feel that their democracy was stolen by those in power.
The economic crisis hit countries all over the world, including the United States. And in Iceland, how Iceland dealt with it, particularly incarcerating some of its bankers, was, I think, unheard of until that time. Can you tell us a little bit about that? What happened?
One of the main reasons the banks grew so quickly is that we have to bear in mind that Iceland privatized all their public banks very quickly and in a really bad way, because it was supposed to be very professional, but in the end it ended up like political parties would sort of hand over the big banks to, you know, people that were friendly to their particular parties. And then what they had actually done, and nobody of course knew until we had a special report made by a special committee that actually went on a quest to investigate what went wrong. One of the things that was very interesting is that the two big banks, they never actually paid out. They lent each other for the down payment. So one bank lent the other. So there was no real money happening there. It was just a horrific scam. But the reason why they managed to grow so incredibly big is that they found a loophole in the EEA, the European Economic Area laws, that 70 or 80% of Icelandic laws are really European law, because we are part of the European Economic Area. And so we're obliged as a part of that contract to actually ratify most of the European laws through a very undemocratic process. It's only bureaucrats that do it. There is no political hand in it from Iceland's behalf. And so they found a loophole in it, which they used in order to expand into Europe. And it was, you know, the only way I can actually truly describe it is it was like a massive pyramid or Ponzi scheme. And so they also sucked dry in all sorts of various different bundles, pension funds, heavily invested in it, and so forth. And there was even if people say that Iceland went, you know, it didn't go too bad, I mean, there are so many people that went bankrupt, there are so many people that lost their homes, there are so many pensioners that lost their savings because they were encouraged to move their money from, you know, into less secure accounts in the banks. And so, I mean, it's not like we came victorious out of it, not at all. And even if we have put into prison some of the people that were like the bank managers and so forth, the owners of the banks, the people that owned it and were on the board as chairmen, are never going to get arrested. They're too big. And they, like, one of them is now back on the billionaires list or whatever, and the other one owns the only independent media outlet in Iceland, you know, that owns TV stations, radio, newspapers, online papers.
And by independent, you mean not owned by the government?
Yeah.
So it's just like in the U.S., those most in power within the banking industry are still too big to fail or be held accountable.
Yeah. And that's why, even if I'm a parliamentarian, I don't really respect laws, because if you want to have people respect laws, then I expect that the laws are the same for everybody. But they're not. So there's always a handful of people that the law cannot ever catch. And that's not the hardy criminals or the petty criminals. It's the biggest criminals. Like, there is a saying, you know, if you want to rob a bank, own it, and stuff like that. But it's all true. That's the scary part. And there is absolutely nothing we can do about it in the current legal framework we have. I mean, while these we can change it. You know, in Iceland, we can change it in such a way that we know exactly who writes what portion of the laws. And the only way to have that transparent is by actually strengthening the parliament so that we can make sure that our healthcare system won't be privatized, so that we can make sure that the nation will actually reap the benefit from all the vast natural resources that we have. It can't be achieved primarily through a new constitution, because it would change a lot of system functions about elections and how the president works and various other things. So, but that is one of the main agendas right now. If we would get into power, I've been pushing that other parties that would be interested in creating a binding agreement before elections, that we would only form a government to put forward the new constitution and the national referendum on if we should carry on with the EU bid, and then would dissolve it after 6 months. And that's the only, if we can't get that through, I'm not going to run again, because I've already like done 6 years, and you know, once this term is finished, I've done eight. It's a long time out of a life.
Birgitta Jahn's daughter is a founder of Iceland's Pirate Party.
What is the Pirate Party?
It is a party that was formed before last elections in Iceland in the summer of 2012. It has roots in an international movement that focuses on maybe four major pillars. One is to focus on Freedom of Information Act, so that the general public can have access to information in order to take informed decisions, and to keep those in power accountable. Another one is more access to power through direct democracy, to use the tools that we have created, very much inspired in many ways by somebody called Buckminster Fuller, who wrote in 1940 about telephony voting, and that could improve democracy in the United States. So now we have the technology to actually allow people to be more engaged and part of their societies in the decision-making. So that's one of the focuses. Another one is privacy laws in the spirit of counterbalance to what Snowden has been revealing to the rest of us. And to have true privacy, we need to fix the copyright laws. And we also need to transform this idea that during universal times of greed, that sharing is a criminal act. Sharing is something that we are indoctrined as children is a good thing, an honorable thing to do. But now we're criminalizing our children and teenagers because they share in a different way than we are taught to share. So these are sort of the pillars of the Pirate Party in Iceland. We very much focus on changes in hierarchy, so we do not... I'm not a traditional leader. We don't have leaders in the party, but we try to make sure that those are good at any different thing within the organization, that they perform the task. So we don't have a normal pyramid structure, not upside down pyramid or ordinary pyramid. We have the circle of power. So we are all created equal, and we do not embrace power, because if you embrace power, you become power, and then you lose yourself.
On Wings, you're listening to a conversation with Birgitta Jansdottir, Iceland's Member of Parliament for the Pirate Party. I'm Christina Onnestad. We continue our conversation when I asked Jansdottir what led her to form the Pirate Party.
I actually worked very closely with WikiLeaks, one of the biggest leaks in history, were coming in from private Chelsea Manning. And I was working as a volunteer for WikiLeaks at the time, just by coincidence. I co-produced Collateral Murder, which was a video that shows killing of civilians in New Baghdad. I encourage you to see it if you haven't. Because very many people all over the world, both in the United States and in every corner of the world, were trying to stop the Iraq war from happening. We nearly were successful because we were using the internet. But there were just so many systematic lies that it ended up being the disaster it became. And so I was hoping by help releasing this leaked video that killed a photographer from Reuters and his assistant and many other civilians, that by people seeing the true horror of war and how disassociated it had become with reality, because it's very much like a computer game, I was hoping that it might stop other wars from happening. When I was working with WikiLeaks, I was also working with other people like John Perry Barlow, who is co-founder of the Electronic Frontier Foundation. And I became very much engaged with human rights issues that are related to the internet culture that we live in at the time. I also am one of the first female web developers in Iceland. I started to work as a developer and using the internet also as a poet in 1995. And as a consequence, I was sort of the only geek in the parliament when I was in my last term. And this is all a prelude why I then created the Pirate Party, because I managed to get through the Icelandic parliament in the wake of the crisis a parliamentary resolution tasking the government to make Iceland a safe haven for freedom of information, expression, speech, with a heavy focus on online privacy. And this is way prior to Snowden. And in order to legalize access to journalistic information that is primarily found through investigative journalism.
And projects like WikiLeaks.
Absolutely legalize WikiLeaks, because it's a necessary function. It's sort of like a digital black box or Dropbox, the digital envelope that people would share in parks, where a source would hand over documents to a journalist for a story. So I got this resolution through, and it's not law. A resolution means that you task the government to change laws. So we tasked the government to change 10 laws in 4 different ministries. And they haven't really done most of it, but it was a unanimous vote in the parliament. So because of that, the current government is also working on it. And they finally put some effort into it and got a proper steering group working on the laws, which is good news. Because it's not enough just to have data centers in Iceland. You want to be able to offer data centers with a clear legislative framework so it's safe to host the data, which it's not yet. Even if many claim it is, it's not yet safe, not 100% safe. You cannot protect it against the NSA. You know, nobody can actually, not even the Chinese government. So I felt it was necessary to get more people inside parliament that have a profound, deep understanding about legislation that needs to be created to deal with the reality we live in today, where there are absolutely no borders. Information does not have any borders. and so access to information doesn't have any borders either. Information about you, your digital shadow, is something that follows you increasingly more and more and more, and there are currently no proper protections for it. And I had my own encounter in relation to that, because I'd helped WikiLeaks with this video, and we worked on the IMI resolution together with many others. The US government subpoenaed Twitter to hand over my private data on Twitter in early 2011. And so I had to take them to court, and of course I lost. So they could actually go and have private information, my messages and so forth, handed over, even if I was a parliamentarian for a sovereign state in another country. And that has led to a lot of consequences, of course. But then later on, when Snowden came forward, it actually elevated the discussion about the status of our privacy. And this is, you know, one of the many reasons the Pirate Party had to come into place in Iceland. And, you know, for some reason, we've been able to be the party that sort of captures people's imagination in the sense that people feel the system doesn't work for them anymore. And they've tried the traditional parties, and they are looking at the Pirate Party to sort of help set a new foundation on how to build this system, which is a humongous task.
How is the Pirate Party received by Parliament and those in power?
I think that they are all slightly uncomfortable about us receiving so much support. You know, everybody talks about this is just a temporary situation. People are going to go back to the old traditional parties, and we will see if it happens or not. I don't really care. As long as I think the only chance for Iceland to have the fundamental changes that we need so that we can make sure that, you know, our environment will not be sacrificed on the altar of ultra-capitalists. And I think, and when I talk about ultra-capitalists, I'm talking about neocon people, like, you know, many people point to the banking collapse in the States, to that sort of policies.
Unregulated,
yes.
Neoliberal, yeah. Laissez-faire capitalism.
Exactly. It's crazy stuff. I mean, it's just so crazy that you can't even fathom it. It's just a completely psychopathic society. And I don't think any human beings want to live in that sort of apathy. People in general want to live in a society where you actually care for one another. Installing fear, constant fear, is a dreadful place to live in. I used to live in the States, so I know how it's been indoctrinated, and it's very sad. Because, you know, of all the different places in the world where I've been, I think what I love the most about the United States is this sense of community in many different places, not everywhere, but there's a very strong sense of belonging to a community and to working on volunteer basis. But it's been exploited, it's being destroyed, just like we used to have cooperatives in the countryside in Iceland, you know, with the farmers had cooperatives and so forth. That's all being ruined. And so we are in this crisis times, which is so interesting, where everything is transforming and changing. It's very exciting. And the Pirate Party in Parliament is sort of a reminder for the others that we are in a transformative times where nothing is as it was. And I think it is one of the most important things and the most biggest freedoms we have, all the Pirate Party parliamentary members, 3 out of 63, very few, is that we do not care if we don't have this job tomorrow. And it makes it possible for us to absolutely always just be ourselves, never pretend to have a policy about stuff we don't know about, but focus on the stuff that we're very good in, because we are experts in many fields and we have expertise that the others don't have. But we want to, you know, learn from the others and share our knowledge with them as well. And I think it's inspirational for the others. I mean, we're a little bit intimidating in many ways, but we're friendly people, so unless, you know, they piss us off. So then we can be a bit scary.
How did you come up with the name Pirate Party?
Well, it originates actually from Sweden. So the Swedish Pirate Party was the first, and we are actually the first Pirate Party in the world to have people elected as a party into a national assembly. The Swedes got 2 MEPs, members of the European Parliament. They came up with a name because Pirate Bay was in Sweden, and there was a special unit in the police task force called Piratbyrån, the Bureau of Pirates. They were mocking the others that were trying to make them look bad. So it's sort of a cheeky thing to call us pirates. We do not affiliate with ocean, But in the old days, you would surf the internet. And so we are like cyberpunks more than pirates in many ways. But there's even pirate parties in the United States.
Really?
Yeah. They're still relatively small. I think the biggest bases are in Boston, New York, and L.A. I just met with a pirate from Brazil yesterday who was here to officially invite me to come over to speak there. We have an annual meeting with the Pirate Party International. It's a global movement. It's sort of like the Green Movement, like with the Green Parties. And we try to share our experience and policies and even, you know, campaign kits. And there are like city councils all over the world. And there was a massive election victory in Spain for the pirates.
In Iceland, the Pirate Party has 3 members in parliament.
Yeah, I mean, we only got 5% of the vote. You know, many people wouldn't vote for us because of the name, that it was very un-Icelandic and weird. But then now most people have forgotten about the name is weird.
Iceland's Pirate Party received a 34% approval rating in a June 2015 public poll, forecasting a surge in votes by the next election in 2017.
Yeah, I mean, we've been scoring again and again and again as the biggest party with 34% of the vote out of, like, there are 6 parties. And nobody is as shocked about this as we are.
And you have the mayor or a city council member of Reykjavik is with the Pirate Party as well.
So he's just a part of the council, but he's not the mayor. I don't really know why we are so popular. I mean, we are not... do not try to be populistic. We do not try to pretend that we have all the answers. I think it is very important to acknowledge that strong policy comes from collective work. No one individual or a handful of individuals have all the answers on how to fix things. So we want to try to engage people to work on us creating the bigger sort of system installs. I just know from both my own life, I've been a human guinea pig on how the system doesn't work. It's become so big that there are so many people that fall through the cracks. And that means that you can either try to do patchwork or you can actually, and I think it was Buckminster Fuller actually that also said that if a system is outgrown, you can't fix it, then you can actually start to work on another system on the side. And then once the nation is ready, you can make a clean install. So everybody that's had a computer and they try to patch them and the hardware is too old for the new software, you have to create new hardware. And the new constitution is the new hardware. And whenever people are ready for it, I'd be willing to help.
Well, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure.
That was Birgitta Jansdóttir, poetician and Iceland's member of parliament with the Pirate Party. We spoke at her office in Reykjavik, Iceland, June 17th, 2015. I'm Christina Onnested.
To hear this and other Wings programs again, email wings@wings.org or check our daily news feed at facebook.com/wingsradio. Wings thanks all our supporters, including your local community radio station, Suzette Cullen, and Genevieve Vaughn, whose many works on the gift economy can be discovered at www.gift-economy.com. The Wings sound logo is from Libana's album A Circle Is Cast. This is the Women's International News Gathering Service.